Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Today, I'm proud to bring you Living Hermeticism with Frater Serpentis Satori, and we'll be discussing some very interesting topics. Greeting and welcome, Satori. How are you?
All right.
I'm glad to hear that. Today is proving to be an eventful day, and it's unfolding rather rapidly. I'm going to a rally after we finish with today's show.
There we go. Everything's back in motion.
Yes, yes. So how are you? How's Chicago?
It's doing better. We finally have spring here.
Okay, that's good. Now, when you suggested today's topics, I gave it a lot of thought, and I wanted to preface what we'll be discussing with two things, one from my personal experience and one from mythology. There is a biblical myth of the Tower of Babel, which went that humanity or a king driving humanity strove to build a tower that would bridge heaven and earth. And the chief god of the pantheon, or the only god, depending on where you get this myth from, did not want that to happen. So he not only knocked down the tower, but he made people's languages confused so they wouldn't understand one another. And this is something that is, I guess, the guiding myth for a lot of my life work, in that because people speak different languages, they have different nomenclature, they have different terminology, it makes it hard for them to understand. And a lot of the work we've been doing with bridging spiritual thought goes towards reestablishing a common language. And also personally, I was born into a Greek-American household. And in addition to the Greek-American culture, which grew up kind of like in the 40s and 50s and was a thing in and unto itself, there was the parent Greek culture, and then there was the surrounding American culture, neither of which saw things eye to eye with the Greek-American culture. So you grew up knowing, in addition to two languages, you grew up knowing that there were different ways of looking at the world and that they don't always dovetail very nicely. So tonight we're going to be talking about one's relationship with the divine, and we'll be using terms that might be unfamiliar to some people. But again, I just ask them to have some patience and to know that we're under the curse of tongues, and it'll make sense the more you listen and try to figure it out.
Well, all those terms came about because they were trying to understand people who were born especially talented with things,
mm-hmm.
whatever those particular, whichever set of tools that is.
Uh-huh.
Like when I was watching the Snyder Cut with my roommate, he's like, well, how powerful are Amazons? I'm like, well, most Amazons are about half as powerful as Wonder Woman each. And this guy's able to do all that to the Amazons. Like, well, yeah, but Wonder Woman is basically twice as powerful as everybody else, and she can fly and throw lightning.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beginning of understanding about this issue, and this is where this issue comes from, even in America, the thing where we just say someone's an old soul.
Right.
And that's our common understanding of the people who are like my best friend from New Orleans, our grandmothers both told us we were born old, which was why we had the issues we had when we were in elementary school and junior high, because we weren't very interested in little kid things when we were little kids, except for cartoons and her interest in animal TV shows.
I was also told that I was born old. I was an old soul. Back in the 70s when I was very active with channeling, or back then it was called deep trance mediumship, the most common question I got asked by psychics was, where the hell did they dig you up from?
Yeah, I had managed to work with people who were other old souls, so that was more the issue of understanding why such interesting spirits always wanted to have conversations with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always framed in, because I accepted at a young age that I was a child of Hakate, it's easier for me to just, because those spirits choose to talk to me because they know I'm going to listen to what they have to say. Unlike so many other people who, when an unusual spirit shows up, they're just going to resist what they're told.
Right, and it all boils down to the degree of relationship. You know, at a very early level of relationship, people worship in a traditional sense, you know, the that which is greater than the person, and they clothe it in whatever way they can best understand it, or in the way that it chooses to communicate with the person. And then there's a whole spectrum of relationships.
But we're doing it at the higher level too. That's the whole thing about understanding that religions themselves are symbolism.
Right.
That you don't really know. And that on some level, when I was talking to a friend of mine about why there are different religions, I'm explaining in the underworld, you're going to be judged. You're going to be judged about whether or not you're going to the good place or a bad place. And that means, how well did you follow the rules? And so he's like, well, what are the rules? I'm like, well, that's why we have different religions. If you're more comfortable with a religion based on, like Tony Soprano's famous quote about, like, if Hindus are right and you eat steak, you're going to hell.
Right.
That on a very basic level, you choose your religion because you understand its code of conduct. And then you get into all the sticky issues about names of God.
And lots of arguments about hard polytheism versus soft polytheism and things like that. I've, as part of my path, I followed many paths, and I liken it to playing hide and seek with my personal God, in that all of these journeys through the Earth's cultures and their belief systems always led me back to a particular mask or a particular aspect. And it's always been the same living energy behind the cultural mask. And as I get older, I found, as is often the case, I've gone back to my parent culture where I felt most comfortable. And the universe is happy to interact with me in that particular way.
No, I'm the same way. And you have the advantage of worshiping the God who is one of the most important gods in almost every pantheon, by whatever name.
That's true. And
that the only deity who is as popular is Isis, under whichever name she's going by in the local religion, because she exists in almost every religion, and so does her boyfriend, husband. So is her significant other. It exists in almost every religion except where he doesn't. And his omission is always an interesting reflection of the local religion.
for anyone who wants to study this, we have established fields of comparative religion, also comparative mythology, which aside from the spiritual literature of each tradition and the practices of the practitioners, there's a lot in those scholarly fields that could provide answers to questions. And these aren't new conclusions. The ancients had the same conclusions. Cicero wrote extensively on the nature of the gods and divination, and he basically outlined all these things in his books, which are still available. Last time I looked, from Penguin, and then they might even
got reissued. A whole bunch of Cicero's books just got reissued in new translations.
So they're accessible to anybody who chooses to go there. I've always thought of it like going to a gym, and this is probably because of my theosophical universalist type of outlook, but if you go to a gym, the exercises that you do are to create the type of physical vehicle that you want. You know, you can go to the gym and do things that will improve your health overall. You can go to the gym and become a bodybuilder. You can go become a runner, a swimmer. And then there's all these differing systems on how to do bodybuilding. What exercises do you do? How do you eat? You know, what type of mindset do you need to have? But then the laboratory of your body will tell you whether those things will work for you. And as long as you're not just reading books on bodybuilding or reading magazines on bodybuilding, if you actually start lifting weights, you will become eventually a bodybuilder. That's a lifelong process, because what works today might not work tomorrow, and what worked for your hero or your idol or your example might not work for you. The same thing with spirituality. I look at it the same way. You have, like, you know, general worship tools or spiritual tools, and then you have destinations, you know, where your soul wants to go, or where you feel attuned and want to feel more attuned, but you still have to do the exercises to get there. Otherwise, you know, you're just filling your head with information and not applying it anyway.
No, it's just book learning. That's not
right.
Actually doing the will of the divinity, under whichever aspect of divinity you serve.
Now, a lot of people hold a lot of beliefs, and as you pointed out, that if certain sects of Hinduism are correct, then if you eat a cow, you're going to go to an unpleasant place. That brings up the whole, you know, question of heavens and hells. It's been my experience that there are places, through my shamanic practice, primarily my dream work, that there are places that are very similar to the heavens and hells and limbos and other in-between places that are described in the world's religions and mythology. And you can find yourself there, and you can even be there while you're here. You could be living a life in heaven here, or you could be living a life in one of the hells here. So you always know where you are, you know, by the quality of the life that you're experiencing.
Yeah, but on some level, that's also my friend from the voodoo shop is the most anti-monotheistic person I have ever met. And the foundation of her argument is Christians can't even all get along. There are like 1,000 sects of Christians, and they spent the past 2,000 years killing each other. And they all worship the same God.
That's very true. And I shared with you, and I shared on the show several times, that when I was growing up, the take of the Greeks in Greece on why that is so is because when Paul came with Christ to Athens and spoke at the Areopagos, the god Ares from the old pantheon killed him and started impersonating him. And that's how the rural Greeks of Lemnos, and I've met other Greeks from other places who expressed the same thing during my lecture, and he explained that the Christ that we have now is not the Jesus of Galilee. It's actually Aries. That's why it's so contentious.
But I always thought that was the real issue, because the real issue is where you want to go when you die, and that's part of the issue with people who know they are children of gods are just not interested in Christianity, because Christianity was originally created for people who were not initiates, which is why Nietzsche calls it a religion of slaves.
But Christianity also has some of the same concepts in there. It has, for instance, that we're children of God, that people can, if they chose to do certain things, do more than Jesus did. Jesus himself says that. And also there's like the whole thing with divine favor and prophets and saints in like Catholicism, Greek Orthodoxy, and several other Christian.
Yeah, there are those elements, but in a lot of Christian circles, they don't have those levels.
Right.
They choose not to have those levels, and they don't understand the children of God, angels on earth level of things. Well, like my Christian roommate and I were on the bus not too long ago, and there were these pair of Mormon girls who I keep bumping into because I get along fine with Mormons, because when I started in the world of magic, I was raised secular, but most of the people doing magic in the 80s were either raised Catholic or raised Mormon.
And that makes sense.
And then when you rebelled against your parents' religion, you ended up getting into some form of witchcraft, which led to the old gods. So we were bumping these Mormon girls, and I was trying to explain to him that Mormonism is a religion of direct contact, that Mormons all talk to God personally, and that's what their level system is based on.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him that as a Christian and as someone who believes in direct contact and doesn't really believe in the clergy, he has more in common with what they believe than what most other Christians believe. And then I went back and do what we're going to talk about next episode about the origins of Mormonism and how that came to be. You and I's paradigm, when we are children of one of the... Crowley says something about the one and the many in the Book of Lies. And I think that's how people that's the more comfortable way for most people to believe in the many and believe that you are attuned to an octave or a rainbow color or however you understand it, which is that part of the many. That you work for a certain department within the universe.
Right.
And you more or less worked for the same department since you were first initiated. You don't really change departments very much, and when you do, you're doing it because you want to find out what they're doing over in NASA. you're infiltrating NASA to learn what the hell's going on in NASA. It's more like that. Because
that's,
you can work with a different deity from a different pantheon if you're a polytheist, if you want to go through the work.
It's similar.
Even if that god in a different pantheon is your same god under a different name.
That's what I found in playing hide and seek with the masks of God or of a goddess. It's similar for people to understand if they know about saints. You know, saints are in between people that are kind of intercessors. To make a comparison, it's similar to the heroes of the Olympian tradition. Even though the qualifications for getting into like Elysium or heaven are different, because there are different ways of looking at the world, the mechanism is pretty much the same. And in fact, a lot of the old heroes became saints under the new system, and also in the UFO tradition. So like in the monotheistic traditions now, we have angelology, which is very popular. I just received some books on angelology, which I'll be reviewing or interviewing the authors. And it tells you which angel to talk to about what, to get a particular type of result. We have the concept of earth angels, that some incarnate humans are actually angels or are doing angels' work. And in the UFO literature now, we have star seeds who can be either walk-ins or wanderers. It's basically the same concept. They represent a certain planet or constellation, and they're incarnate into the human life stream, but they're in-betweeners, and they bridge the higher spiritual cosmic realm with this realm, and they do a particular work. So as you pointed out, they're working, and they're different departments. I find that when communicating with theosophists, that's the best way to communicate to work within that structure, because even though the people filling the positions varies from theosophical group to theosophical group, like how many incarnations did El Moria have, whether he was incarnate recently or he stopped with Blavatsky's time, those type of questions are interesting for debate, but the system is the same. You have the Elohim, for instance, then you have the David kingdom, the angelic kingdom. Underneath the Devas are the elementals, and then you have the human, which ranges from the guy in the street to a Chohan, which is kind of like a ascended master's ascended master. So there are these hierarchies, and as you pointed out, each of these has a way or department, and you could spend your life in one department, or you could work with any department, like people do with the saints, or with the aliens, or with the ascended masters.
I mean, that's the point of divine function within a pantheon. Like, if you want to learn how to be a good leader, you work with Jupiter or Odin or whoever the leader guy is. If you want to work on heroism, you work with Hercules or Thor or Horus or Chongo, and so on. It's just a matter of picking the one that you resonate with and whose religion you don't think is too weird and creepy.
Very, very true. And like using the bodybuilding analogy or the exercise analogy too, there's all sorts of ways to cheat, like with bodybuilding by taking steroids. And it's the same thing with metaphysical paths as well. There's all sorts of ways to cheat, and some people do depending on what their goals are. But it's up to you to maintain the integrity of your path and to be open to what your path teaches you. Because the systems that you're following are the ultimately and eventually the opinions of somebody, whether it's an incarnate or discarnate entity, and they'll take you to a certain point. But you have to use discernment and judgment to judge if that's your true way.
Right, and there's every once in a while there is the off-ramp into a different god or goddess and a different pantheon to either learn more about the mask of God you truly serve by learning about how people worship your same god in a different country, so you can gain that understanding too, if you're open-minded enough to do that.
I tend to look at every single path, and I'm not looking for a path. I have my own, it's interesting what some people do to, like in terms of tools, like techniques. It would be similar to, like, if you're, again, a bodybuilder studying what people in Russia or in other countries do it in bodybuilding. Like, a lot of the very early visualization and mental work, that was coming out of Russia. So even though it wasn't American bodybuilding, that technique obviously produced a champion. So it was worth trying. And I still use some of the things I learned on that particular path, even though I'm no longer as enamored of Russian bodybuilding as I once was.
Yeah, but at a certain level you get to, if you're on a path like ours for long enough, you do start to take some of the off-ramps to check out some of the way my god or goddess is seen elsewhere.
Right.
Especially if your god or goddess is one of, like, the big seven in Santeria or in Greece, who exist in pretty much every religion under different names.
Right. And that's in every single book on magic, and in the days of the week. And in
that's everywhere. We need to delve too much into that. But, yeah, that's consistent and known.
Yes. And never far from where you're standing. So if you want to start exploring those mysteries, the key is there. All you need to do is open the door.
I think one of the things that's misunderstood about us old souls is that those of us who have been children of the same archetype for a very long time, when other people think we've sold our souls to our archetype, they don't understand that, like, I'm the senior officer here. You want me to give up my spaceship because your god loves me? But your god loves everybody. My goddess needs me here doing the things I'm doing here. Like, every once in a while, because of you and I's relationships with our deities use us to filter this reality.
Right. And that's difficult to understand to people. Yes, you know, basically Christianity and monotheism has a soul bargain there. Right in the belief system, that basically you're surrendering your soul to your divinity. My path doesn't have that. It's just that if you follow the particular path, you become more attuned to initially, and then you become more like your divinity. And then, as you pointed out, you become a channel for that divinity into the world, and you do the work of that divinity in the world. So, yeah, it's like having a position. It's like having a job.
And it's also that they have it backwards, is that we didn't sell our souls to our gods. We're emanations of them.
Yes.
They gave up part of their power to have us in this world, even if it was just a drop of blood. Even if they didn't make us out of clay like Wonder Woman.
And some belief systems were made out of clay or stones or, you know, all sorts of things.
Well, right. But it's
the blood of Titans mixed in with clay, you know.
But that's always one of those issues. And for my whole life, I've always had to be like, no, I'm spoken for. And I'm not interested anyway. I'm not interested.
Right.
How are you different than Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on my door? I'm not interested. Go away. You can't make me a better offer than Hecate made me a long time ago. I'm just not interested.
That's very true. In my quest, wherever I went, I found the same thing. And as I write in my, my bios and things like that, or when I'm describing this, you know, I think of Hercules both as my divine ancestor, as my tutelary deity, and also as my operant archetype, that this is the pattern of the universe that I'm a part of. So in one sense, Hercules is my soul, you know, or vice versa. But yes, it's your...
And to give that up is to give up yourself.
Right.
then you're selling your soul. Then you're giving up yourself
to something else.
To someone who thinks they know better.
When Athena and I had a store in Pennsylvania, we sold metaphysical books. We sold religious books. We also sold, we had an extensive used bookstore. We used to give talks in the back, and we also used to sell like role playing games and video games and all sorts of stuff, you know. There were at the time there was one guy that Athena called Thumper because he'd always be thumping the Bible. Whenever I would converse with everybody, you know, so we'd have like these theological debates near the science fiction section, which was a little bit out of the way. And I would always point out that, I don't whore after foreign gods, because that's something that they could understand. So he's asking me to rebuke the gods of my ancestors or my forefathers and go whoring after his foreign god. So that
even his foreign God knows better. Even his foreign God knows better, because at one point with my Christian roommate, I'm pointing out that what that actually says in Hebrew is put no other God above me. The commandment is actually that other gods are not false. Other gods are not deceptive. There is not one true God. If you serve me first.
Right.
That's what the commandment is. That's the commandment. The commandment is put no other God above myself. In no place in the Ten Commandments, and see, then there's also the commandment about honor thy mother and father, whereas if you're a demigod, you're like, see, I'm covered by one of your own commandments. I'm honoring my mother.
Right.
I'm honoring my mother, and your God doesn't deny my mother's existence. In fact, the way that is written is kind of squirrely. Your God knows better.
Yeah, if you become familiar with ancient Near Eastern, Egyptian, and Hellenic thought, it's very, very interwoven in Babylonian. It's very interwoven into biblical thought, and many things as they're written become clearer once you have those shades of meaning there.
Right, but even right there, you're coming from an authentic perspective. It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there. Yahweh doesn't deny the existence of other gods. He just says, worship me first. If you're reading this book, you should be worshiping me first. But honor thy mother and father, which is read differently by people who are children of those gods.
Right. I didn't want to get into those waters with the people that
okay.
I debated in the science fiction section. So I'm glad you brought them out.
Right.
I just dealt with the, you know, the big
thing. I would deal with this all the time because when I was a fortune teller on Jackson Square,
uh-huh.
My partner at the time was also a child of Hecate. And during Mardi Gras, the Christians would come out and try to save our souls. And one of Hecate's titles is Soteria.
Soteria.
Hecate is the savior. Hecate is the savior. And so they would try to convert us, and we'd go, we don't want you going where we're going. Just go away. We don't want mother even knowing about you. Just go back where you came from and leave us alone.
Hercules,
that worked fine in the ancient world. That worked fine until it didn't.
Yeah, Hercules was also known as Soter. And I had the same argument against Christianity, which is why I, after parochial school or during parochial school, I started to stray from it, in that I didn't want to go to a heaven that was as described, where priests would still be in charge. And also I'd be on my knees going, you know, glory, 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 or hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. I couldn't imagine sitting still for that for longer than a minute or so before. I'm attention deficit disorder. It's like, that seemed like a hell to me, you know. So
you're in boxing and horse racing in your afterlife? What the hell? Even if I go to Celtic Heaven, they can still gamble there. They're still drinking and gambling in Irish Heaven.
And in Elysium, basically, it's your ideal life. There are some set Elysiums, like there's the glam Elysium for heroes and, you know, people who are in the public eye. Then there's the Elysium for the mystics. Then there's the Elysium for good people who live several good incarnations. Then there are your private Elysiums, which the Hindus call Devakan. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But there are all these other concepts of heaven. And in the metaphysical traditions that I grew up with, in Monroe, one of his books on astral projection, there's like a band of heavens, you know, like a bunch of different places you can go to, and you stay there, whether it's one of your own creation, which you can start doing in this life, by the way, or whether it's a cultural one, but you stay there until you realize that, you know, heaven's not what it's cracked up to be. And that's one of the signals that you're ready to move out of your heaven and go back into the wider universe again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on some level, that's a reading of what happened in WandaVision, that she creates her own heaven and realizes
right.
She's lying to herself. And then re-enters the wider multiverse.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. I didn't think of WandaVision, but yeah, now that you're pointing out, that's exactly correct.
I mean, and there's also like every TV show about the supernatural at one point has a character die and go to heaven. And they even joke about it in the Supernatural TV show about like, no, the Winchester brothers have died a dozen times.
Yeah,
we just usually don't let you remember.
And Castiel seems to be like a rite of passage around there.
Castiel might go this again. You guys dying and going to heaven. Oh, you guys.
Yes. Yeah, I was realizing just like the superhero movies and comic books and television shows, they preserve the heroic mythology and clothe it in modern day garb. Those shows have great value in that they preserve our folkloric heritage, all of them. They go back to the folklore. And they do what storytellers have done since the dawn of time. They preserve certain information through entertainment. So I've been watching those with a brand new understanding, and I'm amazed at how powerful a tool that is.
Yeah, because pop culture is young folklore.
Yes.
Or folklore is old pop culture. Either way.
Now, in my understanding, as you grow, if you decide to continue to grow, and if you're open to viewing things outside of the lens you're currently viewing things from, everything becomes a bit more organic and it makes a lot more sense. Than if you're looking at it through the lens of your current understanding and not expecting your current understanding to change, because then you get caught in rigid categories. Whereas if you're willing to let go of outmoded ways of being or doing or seeing, all of a sudden the world kind of like organically redefines itself, and it's not jarring. You don't have a world being destroyed. Or anything really extreme. It's just everything metamorphoses sometimes like very quickly, but it doesn't need to be, the transition need not be traumatic.
Right.
So one of the, I had a book, it was called The Death of the Hero, Birth of the Soul. I have no idea where it is. It's in a box somewhere and I haven't read it in decades. But I couldn't understand it then, what I learned from it then. But I'm understanding it now that I'm in my 60s, that, basically even the heroic path that I've dedicated my life to, there's something on the other side of it. And getting to that other side need not be as traumatic as having a fire lit to consume you so that you smoke and descend to Olympus, that you can just accept it. And then the heroic path blossoms into something quite.
Well, the other side of the heroic path is coaching. You're too old to be an Olympic gymnast now,
right?
And you've accumulated injuries, and you have your accumulated injuries. So you can't play anymore. But because of how well you did as an Olympic gymnast, you can coach, and because you're an Olympic gymnast, you're way better at bodybuilding than lots of people who own their own gyms anyway.
And just for folks listening, I was never actually an Olympic gymnast. I'm an Olympic athlete in the.
I'm using that as a metaphor. That's a metaphor that goes around among my New Orleans crew, because now that we are all in our 40s, we are all being retired to coaching, because the universe only wants to wheel us out and let us loose with our magic swords when things are really bad.
Uh huh.
So we've all had the conversation in the post-Trump world about being retired to coaching, which I guess the more glamorous way of looking at that is being captain of your own starship. I guess that's a nicer way of putting that.
And those are metaphors that I'm using in my current work. I have starships, and we're going to be doing things for charity, and we also have the coaching aspect of it. So, yeah, those are excellent metaphors, and I find them useful as well.
I had a friend ask me about that recently, and I'm like, no, my friends in New Orleans and I are now, they don't want us on the front lines anymore. There is an argument whether or not they don't want us on the front lines because, you know, you don't want to lead with the Justice League, or whether we're just being retired to coaching because there are so many millennials. Either way.
the hard
part of our work is done. So now we have to figure out what to do next. And that's a weird transition.
With me,
so that's what you're talking about what comes after the heroic path.
What comes after
the heroic path is being the inspiration and being the teacher.
And that's where I started going, but then COVID put an end to those activities for a while. So right now it added an extra complexity to this where I thought it was going, and told me, nope, not yet, maybe later. So I find myself in a very interesting position right now, in that the path that naturally started opening up ahead, the door got closed suddenly, and I'm still here. So it's what do you do with still being here? And this podcast actually is part of the answer to that. It's, you know, just to find a creative way of sharing what you know, and getting people to talk about what they know, and then offering this information to people who might be able to use it basically develop at whatever stage they happen to be in. So that's why the programming ranges so widely.
Right, so people can understand more where what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we cooking today? What's the cooking segment? Are we? Maybe we should just talk about the rainbow and the basic. I think everybody sort of understands the seven angels, the seven Santeros, the big seven, because the big seven is everything.
Right.
I mean, I guess you could start out with your favorite day of the week. Contact the God of your favorite day of the week.
Yeah.
That's so different from how they do it in voodoo. That's not so different from either how voodoo do it does and how Jews do it. That's not completely different.
I do it that way too on every day on Facebook. Actually, I convey a blessing from one of the days of the week, and then I'll occasionally give information about the powers for that day of the week. But yeah, that's a basic thing, and it's something that I can offer to a lot of people, you know, at one time, and people seem to appreciate it, so I keep doing it.
I mean, That's a very good way to start, is start by honoring the 7 days of the week as the seven powers, however you want to understand that. And if you don't know how you want to understand that, that's what angels are for. Because angels have to help you.
In angelology,
that's what led to all the problems in the first. No, that's what led to all the problems in the first place over there.
Yeah, the mythology of angels is somewhat different than the reality that many modern books are conveying.
But that's not a bad book. Ask Your Angels isn't a bad book. It's not a bad book at all to start with. If you want to do something more than just meditation visualization, it teaches you mediumship in a healthy way. It teaches you grounding in a healthy way. And it's not a bad place to start if you don't know.
Right.
Or if you're not sure about it, or if all the other things out there sound weird and creepy.
No, these are all excellent books to start with. Even with the runes, there's some really great beginner's book on runes. But in addition to what you're getting out of modern books on runes, it's good to go back and read the Eddas and to read the Scandinavian and the Icelandic sagas, where you get like different aspects of the runes that you're not going to get in a lot of modern introductory books. So it's the same thing with angelology. It's an awesome place to start, and working with angels I consider to be a healthy thing. Again, it's good to basically look at the stories that are out there and just have judgment and discernment as you're moving forward on that particular path as well. Because the press that angels are not getting is not the press that they've gotten throughout human history. And an example can be Supernatural, which you already spoke about. That show will give you some of the more shadowy...
A very interesting point of view on angels that is very true to all of those religions.
Right.
They use some very interesting sources for angelology in that TV show, which when it originally came out, because of my connection with Archangel Michael, a lot of people wanted me to debunk. I'm like, no, I'm surprised they're able to say all of that.
Yeah, I'm also attuned to Michael, too. Michael is part of the rainbow color that I'm currently working with.
Yeah, part of your archetype, the solar hero with the super weapon.
Yes.
Whichever solar hero with whichever super weapon it is.
And that's important to say, though, because, again, different people see the world and apprehend the world in different ways. It goes back to the curse of tongues, you know, with the Tower of Babel. People kill each other over these differences in mask, not realizing that the energies are talking about the same and that they could learn from each other rather than trying to obliterate the other person's perspective.
That's something, the more soft you are as a polytheist, the more comfortable you're with of that. That's just how you're seeing it. That's fine. Like, I work for Hindus now, and at one point my boss realizes, like, every time a dog came into the workplace, the dog would always try to high-five me.
Uh-huh.
And after a couple of weeks, my boss is beginning to get suspicious about that. And I have to explain, no, my God isn't Anubis. That would be, that would be fair. But in reality, my deity is the Roman goddess of guard dogs and keys, sort of. People don't think that about her anymore. But a Roman would say that.
Right.
That answer is perfectly acceptable in the time of Caesar. Today, everybody thinks she's female Satan. And those of us that work for her aren't quite sure where that came from other than Macbeth.
Probably Macbeth and other depictions of the weird sisters, because weird came to mean something else. It came to go beyond W-Y-R-D, like destiny, fate, to being weird, as in strange and creepy, as the word is used today.
Right. I mean, that's in Supernatural, too. The character who is supposed to be Hecate is called the Demon of the Crossroads. And that's early on in that show, too.
Right. They did interesting things with the gods on that show. They had Zeus on there. They had Eros. They had Hermes. They had Diana. They had all sorts of Olympians on the show and did very creative things with them. That's a subject I'm still exploring. We finished binge watching Supernatural. Then we watched Dead Like Me.
And no, I haven't seen that.
We're watching Grimm. Dead Like Me was great. Dead Like Me had a class of deathless people who lived among us who were actually there to ease people's transitions to the afterlife. And
interesting.
Different than what the show portrayed in many ways, but it was done very, the perspective that it showed was, it was done very well without being like creepy. It was very, very good. And now we're watching Grimm, which is very similar to Buffy and Angel and Supernatural. And, you know, so that's what we're currently watching.
That's an, I haven't seen that one myself.
Yeah, instead of focusing on vampires or people passing over, it takes an approach like folklore creatures, especially Germanic, Scandinavian type of folklore creatures primarily. And the Grimm is somebody who hunts them. So this guy's aunt was a Grimm, this detective, and she's on her deathbed, and she tells him that he's a Grimm. He doesn't know anything about it. She left him with some books. And he sees people and sees their faces changing, and he could tell their true form. So that's we're still in the first season, but that's basically it so far. I saw some episodes years ago, but didn't really follow the series.
It sounds interesting. I'm not sure when I will be able to get sucked into that.
I know.
I always heard it was witchy. It was supernatural, but witchy.
Okay, maybe.
that was the review I was given by my witchier friends who did follow it.
Yeah, I haven't gotten
Supernatural toward the middle gets really weird in the middle.
Yes, and it continues to get weird until the end. A lot of people weren't happy with the ending. I thought it had a perfect ending. I was very content with the ending that they had. It seems to be true of all long-running shows that people aren't happy with how it ends or that it ends, but, you know, what can you do? Now, we only have, like, 5 more minutes left, and I guess we can end it by giving people some practical advice.
I think we already went with, like, working with the days of the week till
right.
you till
yeah,
someone wants to talk.
Week is good. And the angels of the days of the week are a good place to start as well. If you don't have another belief system, if you have the prevailing belief system of our culture, angels are actually the best way to start, or saints, if that's something that you've been raised with. But that's a good entry point, and it starts teaching about the number 7 and its importance in metaphysics. Now, if people want to reach you, should they continue reaching you through me?
Yeah.
And how about on next show, we deal with the colors of the rainbow and the number 7 and the days of the week, and we really explain that a little bit.
I thought our next show was going to be about channeling, because it's 4:18.
Okay.
And we were going to do, we were going to talk about channeled texts, starting with Crowley and Smith, starting with Mormonism and the Book of the Law, because those have almost the same backstory, and then having as a broader discussion of aren't all the holy books except for the Tao Te Ching, Confucius, and Buddha channeled?
Yeah, pretty much. They've all been dictated by angels or gods, or the Hermetic texts are supposedly written by Hermes. So,
right, until you get the Hermetic texts that have real authors.
Right.
And even those veer into channeled material, even back in the ancient world.
and in Gnosticism too. The more I learn about Gnosticism, there are some aspects of Gnosticism I don't agree with, but in terms of getting illumination through Gnosticism, that's an interesting topic. Well, we're talking about a later time as well. I'm in agreement then. Then we will do that channeled material, and where you suggested we start is an awesome place to start.
That sounds like because if you're beginning to work with an entity,
mm-hmm.
after this advice, you're going to want to do some sort of automatic writing or some sort of conversation with whichever angel reaches out to you.
Right. And again, depending on your belief system, this could be done in various ways. What I suggest for Westerners is to, if you feel kind of leery about dabbling in anything magical, read Jung's technique on active imagination. And you could think of it that way, where basically you're talking to yourself, but you're just like in a dream, you're giving yourself a persona through which it can communicate with you better. So we'll also look at those when we talk about channeling as well next time.
All right. That sounds like a good plan.
Okay. So we have a plan. Onward. Thank you very much, Satori. I enjoy our conversations both on and off the podcast, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Talk to you in a minute.
Okay, and thanks to everybody who's joined us from home, whether you listen to us live or whether you're going to visit us later on demand. Joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And if you're on Facebook, I constructed a Temple of Hermes on Facebook. It contains right now the Orphic hymns, a bunch of random information, a hymn that I composed myself, and also... I started to catalog these podcasts there. So by the end of this month, all of the Living Hermeticism podcasts will be available there as well. So look out for it. Take care, everybody. And we're going to end with Mighty Elohim, just because.